Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Met Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us back in style. Hey, everybody, I am Jay Plummer of CyberGolf, and you are listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's been a terrific U.S. Open week so far. We've had a lot of great guests, and we got a lot more coming up. We're going to have Ryan Ballingy on the show, our producer here at Golf News Net. ESPN's Tom Rinaldi has promised to stop by, as has Sports Illustrated's John Garrity. But right now, we've got a double dose for you. We're going to talk to CyberGolf's own Jeff Shelley, not only about the U.S. Open, but also about his terrific foundation, The First Green. You've been seeing all of the public service announcements on this week during the U.S. Open. They're doing a wonderful thing, bringing kids into golf courses and teaching them not only about golf, but about the science behind it. And so without any further ado, please welcome one of my very favorite people in all of golf and golf writing. It's CyberGolf's Jeff Shelley. Hey, welcome to the show, Jeff.
Hey, Jay, how you doing?
I'm doing terrific. I'm absolutely loving Chambers Bay. I think it's a fantastic venue. I think we're getting a terrific tournament. Once again, Jordan Spieth is hopefully starting to put the hammer down and give us another historic performance. But so far, so good. I'm really enjoying the golf course. I'm really enjoying the tournament. What about you? What are your thoughts on the course? What are your thoughts on the tournament?
Well, it's kind of panning out what I thought it'd do. It's playing so fast and firm that, you know, it's even though we got the best players in the world there, and it's definitely a, and it's nudist, I think it's really kind of complicating matters for everybody. I think the USGA has done a great job in setting it up, a lot of variety, and I think it's been pretty much as I expected, in the sense that, the people who play well are going to like it, but the people who won't, don't. That's typical U.S. Open setup, so.
I got a riddle for you. What do you call a U.S. Open without all the players griping and moaning?
A PGA Championship.
You've heard that one before.
Yeah, from you.
Thanks for ruining the joke. Hey, everybody, my editor-in-chief just hanging me out to dry over the Jay's Place. Starring Jeff Shelley. But, yeah, of course. That's help. Oh, boy. But, I do have to agree, okay? The whiners have, slammed the trunk and peeled away and screeched a tire, tires spitting gravel, and the great names are still up there. The modern generations, new young guns are all playing well with the exception of Ricky Fowler. You've got Jordan Spieth on top of the leaderboard, you got Dustin Johnson, you got Patrick Reed nipping in his heels, and Jason Day hanging tight. So what do you expect to happen over the course of the next 30 holes or so?
I really think it comes down to the fittest will survive. A little Darwinian action there, in the sense that is a. I played it about 8 times over since it opened in 2007, and it is a brute to walk. You got 3 major up and down hills. You got slippery surfaces to walk on. You got it's warm out there. People don't understand that with the course. Bordering Puget Sound, the sun comes off that water, and I think it enhances the heat index subtly, but nonetheless it does. And I think it's going to be a real endurance contest. I'm sure the USGA hopes and the players hope that there's no Monday 18-hole Monday playoff.
Oh, don't curse us. Don't say the B word. No. Oh, you did not just do that. Okay, well, anyway, it doesn't really matter because we've already been cursed, and you'll never believe who it was that cursed us in the media center. Tony Deere. Tony said the P word in the media center, and instantly the hiss of the entire village was upon him. Everybody turned and looked at him. I'm ducking down under the seats. He's like, What did I just do? Like, dude, you just said the M word, the name of that Scottish play, in a theater for all intents and purposes. You knew. I agree with you. Nobody wants that, but, you know, Tony, you did this, okay, and if it happens, everybody please throw the lettuce first, then the tomatoes, then the onions, then the eggs, and finally the dressing, because that's how you make a good salad.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised either that by the time Sunday rolls around, everybody's going to be around level par. You know, I don't think the USGA's pulled out all of its tricks there as far as how they set that thing up, and it's going to be really interesting to see what happens tomorrow, but even today,
Yeah, not even close. They did stretch it out to a little over 7,600 yards on Friday, and that was the longest day ever in U.S. Open history. You know, you are correct about that. That's, we're going to see a lot of bogeys. We're also going to see a lot of birdies. There's birdies to be had out there. 2, 1, 8, 12, and there's plenty of bogeys to be had anywhere at any given time, especially with the length of these par fours. It's just relentless. 495, 488, 495, 508 to holes 4 through 7. You know, it's a game with which the rest of us are not familiar. So, and hey, we're just walking past Rick Haas. Always good to see one of our very favorite photographers out there on the Jays Play Show. Rick, we got to have you on this show one of these days. He's a scream, everybody. Yeah, New York City in the house, rocking it. Speaking of rocking the house and representing.
Go ahead. Louis Oosthuizen should have, you know, he could have separated himself from the field today, too. But, you know, he had beautiful shots in there. And I don't know how many birdies he missed, but they were all pretty short. But these guys are still scrambling to figure out those greens, you know.
The greens are enormous, and they have excellent undulation, okay, severe undulation. So it is a difficult, you know, 18 holes to have to walk up and down those monstrous, gargantuan hills, even though I have a lot of fun playing that golf course, okay? If you told me, Jake, I'd go out there and walk and carry a bag, I'd say point me towards the first tee. But you're right, they are going to be tired come the end of the day, especially on Sunday after 4 days. So maybe it will be a war of attrition and the fittest will survive. But the fittest are at the top of the leaderboard, okay? Spieth and Dustin Johnson. Reed, I wouldn't exactly call physically fit, but he is a big young dude, so I'm sure that, you know, he'll be able to handle hydrating himself and pacing himself. So how do you see this shaking out? Who are you going to call as a winner closing out the deal on the weekend?
Well, I actually favored a shorter hitter, like, before the thing started, such as Zach Johnson, you know, maybe Graham McDowell with his experience on the UK links. But it doesn't look like that's happening. Spieth is not all that long, but he's still, you know, he's no average Joe there off the tee. So it looks like it is favoring the longer bombers, and that's kind of interesting is how this is shaping up. You know, like I said, Louis had a chance there to really make some hay, but he could, all he had to do, all he kept doing was settling for pars. He did get 3 birdies on the front nine, but it could have been more. It could have been much more. He was hitting the ball really close.
Well, Westheisen played himself into contention, though. A 66 today. He can't blow your nose at that. Yes, he missed a few putts, but if he plays like that again tomorrow, you know, he could get himself close enough into contention. And right now, as we speak, Jordan Spieth has made his second consecutive bogey at the fifth hole. And so now, we have a tie atop the leaderboard with Grace, Dustin Johnson, a shot back, Juice Luton. I thought I had him for breakfast this morning. Oh, yeah, he teed off before I got here. He's at -3. Patrick Reed now dropping to -2 as he's 3 over on the day. And Westheisen creeping up the leaderboard more by hanging around and hanging around than anything else. Guys going backwards. So, but let's switch gears for just a moment, and let's talk to you about your other first love, this new wonderful foundation and company that you've been working with. Tell us all about First Green.
Well, First Green is not really that new. It originated in 97. And so it's been around for quite a while, but it's been mainly around the Pacific Northwest. And its focus traditionally had been dealing more with, farming communities and so forth. But I came on board as the president 3.5 years ago, and because of my background in golf, I said, this is what we should be oriented toward. And it's really been extremely personally rewarding to watch how this thing has blossomed. The USGA for the last 2 years have given us pretty sizable grants. They understand the concept of bringing school kids out from grades 3 through 12 out to the golf course. They're what they are. We host field trips. We link teachers and schools to the golf course superintendents. And we provide the opportunity for both of those entities to get together. The kids come out, roughly about 90% of the kids have never set foot on a golf course before. So there they are out on this formerly what they thought was kind of a exclusive place that's fenced in greenery. And it suddenly a whole new world is opening up to them. But we bring them out there and the teachers are there, parents are there, school administrators and so forth, they come too. And we, depending on the golf course and what kind of natural features it has, if it has water running through, we can have them conduct water quality tests, water velocity, fish habitat, look at the fish that are in these streams, but also they evaluate and they play, or they don't play, but they identify macroinvertebrates, bugs, they get to learn about the turf. What optimal types of soil are best for golf. They learn all about how sand is the best surface in the sense that water can drain through it much easier than clay. They learn about irrigation systems. They learn about mowing heights. One of the guys out here that works for the USGA Green section, Larry Gilhooly, he picks up a rock and asks the kids, what's this little stone? How much is this little stone worth? And the kids go, 2 cents, a nickel, things like that. And he says, no, $1,000. If this rock could run over by one of our greens mowers, which costs upwards of $20,000 each, it's going to cost $1,000 to fix and resharpen the blades. And they'll go, ooh, so it's very interactive. They get to participate in tests and conduct experiments, and they come away with a whole new idea about the scientific efforts that the superintendents make to A, conserve resources, B, minimize any kind of chemical applications and fertilizer, herbicides and all that sort of stuff, how good they are at minimizing water usage. As compared to their, a typical homeowner can go to a hardware store and buy as much Roundup as they want. A lot of that, those kinds of items, those kinds of chemicals are banned on golf courses, so they really get a new appreciation.
So the kids are basically learning the science of golf and of environmentalism while they're out there on the golf course.
Right. That's part of STEM learning. Science, technology, environment, and math. So,
we're talking with Jeff Shelley of CyberGolf. He's editor-in-chief of that magazine, but he's also on the board of the First Green Foundation. So tell us a little bit about how your partnership with the USGA has helped to benefit First Green.
Well, the USGA understands the relationship that we create between the local community and the golf courses. Let me find the quote here, but... Kimberly Arusha, who's the head of the USGA Green section, all the way from Dave Asnavorian, the marketing director, to Janine Driscoll, and all these people, John Bodenhammer, who's second in charge behind Mike Davis. I've known John for 20-some years. He was the former executive director of the Pacific Northwest Golf Association, so John has been a long-time supporter. We've really created I wouldn't say critical mass, but there's a wonderful relationship that we have not only with the USGA, but for the Golf Course Superintendents Association. which understands the value of bringing these kids out and kind of demystifying these golf courses and showing the science that is used to make them what they are. And so, you know, we're really close with the GCSAA as well as the USGA. But it all kind of culminated this year when we were selected by the USGA and Fox as one of the four public service announcements, not only through the Open, but throughout the summer on all Fox USGA broadcasts, to let the world know about us. And the exposure that we're going to get is going to be phenomenal, not only in the United States, but around the world. Estimates are 230 million viewers of our PSA is going to happen.
So what's next for First Green?
Well,
where do you go from here?
Well, we're positioned to grow the program. We're you know, that was a big concern that I had as a president, was to ensure that the infrastructure was in place for the anticipated exposure that we're going to get. And we're in a really good position for all that. You know, a lot of our tools are found online on our website, www.firstgreen.org. And so teachers can go on there, superintendents can go on there, parents can go on there, golf associations can go on there, and other educators, as well as environmental groups, and learn about our program and how we provide the outreach and the link between the schools and the students and the golf courses. And so that's essentially where we're at. And that was my goal when I first got involved, is to enhance that relationship with the golf courses themselves and the superintendents and the people who run the golf courses and the outreach to the school, area schools. The beauty of the program is that it's very local, in the sense that, you know, a lot of golf courses have schools around them. In some cases with private clubs, the members have kids or grandkids who are attending local schools. So there's a natural, you know, relationship and, that they have with the golf course, which is a community asset. You know, it's just a matter of making those places more accessible, to show the world what they do. They're not just people that wake people up at 6 o'clock in the morning mowing lawns or mowing the greens or whatever. They truly are scientists that are working on these courses. So, it's really interesting. You know, typically, traditionally, the environmental movement has been against golf, and in many cases, we've had environmental groups come in and conduct the individual stations at our field trips. You know, for example, out there in Seattle, we have, you know, there's a Salmon Safe Washington, and they're all behind our program. They come out with their staffers, and they actually teach these kids, you know, how the golf courses and the water that's coming through the golf courses help spawning salmon or other fish and other wildlife, and so it's really kind of neat to see that we're providing it. We're kind of unifying everything, you know, from the golf side, the environmental side, you know, and the grow the game type movement. So it's really,
well, it sounds terrific, Jas. We all wish you the very best of luck with that. Now let's get back to the U.S. Okay. Open for just a minute. Do you think that Chambers Bay will be invited back into the informal open rota within the next, say, 12 to 15 years?
Yeah, I clearly do. I mean, why not? It's so unique. It's so beautiful. The measures that are taken there for, you know, speaking in the First Green mode, is that, you know, they do tremendous amount of, make tremendous amount of efforts to prevent water runoff from going into nearby Puget Sound, which has, you know, orca whales swimming by and seals down on the beach and salmon out there. And so there's a, you know, it's a beautiful spot, not only to represent golf, but also from its place in the local environment. And so that, you know, I think that the brown look and the tawny look to the fairways with all fescue and all that shows that folks, and they said this message several times, that this is the future of golf. You know, they can't.
Yes, indeed it is. It is indeed the future of golf. And it's the future in terms of sustainability. It's the future of golf in terms of fast and firm conditions. It's the future of golf in terms of promoting a more links atmosphere with the ground game in vogue. Not a lot of trees so that the wind can come whipping on through and so that the turf stays healthier. And enough difficulty to be tough for the greatest players in the world. But when you move the tees up for the amateurs, they can make their way around and have a very pleasant time. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the best story on the board is obviously Jordan Spieth, and the second best story on the board is Dustin Johnson. Right now we have a three-way tie lead with those two in grace. Two shots back is Lowry, as well as Juice Luton, Patrick Reed alone at minus two and six, and Louis Westhuizen, J.B. Holmes, and Kisner all at minus one. Jeff, we're going to have you back on very, very soon to tell us more about how things are progressing. So thank you so much for joining the show.
Well, that Jay. Sorry to blow your PGA Championship tagline there.
But... That's all right. I'll get you back. See you in a bit. Congratulations, okay. And thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Jay. Have a good one.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network.